Thank you very much for inviting me to this presentation. I appreciate it very much. My title of my talk, of course, is Integrating Animal Genomics with Animal Health, the Genetics of Vaccine Response in Cattle. So what I'm going to talk to you today briefly is a little bit about the research that we're doing at South Dakota State University on the genetics of vaccine response in cattle, specifically the response to a BVD vaccine. So, of course, as Mark talked really explained very well, animal health is an economically important trait in beef cattle. Roughly about 37% of cow-calf operations have been treated for scours. 54% calf loss occurs at age of greater than or equal to 3 months, caused by respiratory or digestive diseases. And the economic costs of BVDV, which is the disease or pathogen that I'm studying right now, is roughly about $94 per animal exposed to a PI cow. Or steer. So it is an economically important disease that we do have to worry about. And of course, we've commonly dealt with animal health problems from more of the veterinarian management side in terms of veterinarian management interventions, again, as Mark talked about, through the use of vaccines, preventive care, treatment, nutrition, housing, and changes in animal husbandry, and so forth. And up to fairly recently, very little emphasis has been given on the potential for genetic selection for improved animal health. And so really, the bovine industry has had some moderate success at mapping QTL, which is basically what we call genes that affect disease susceptibility in cattle. And here are two examples. In the dairy industry, we've had some success for mapping DNA markers that affect Yoni's disease susceptibility, as well as pink eye in beef cattle. So it has been successfully used in the past to map these loci, although, again, as Mark pointed out, I don't believe any of these loci are currently used in practice by the industry to try to select for healthier animals. But there are some drawbacks to this approach or limitations. And the first, one of the big limitations is that when you do these gene mapping studies, you necessarily have to divide the animals into uninfected or healthy groups and infected groups of animals. And so one can ask, well, why is it that the animals in the uninfected group are healthy or categorized as healthy? Were they truly resistant to the pathogen? Or simply, were they not exposed to the pathogen at all? Or did the animals have or had the disease, but you didn't know it? Subclinical cases, for example. So the definition of an animal that's resistant to a particular pathogen is somewhat problematic, whereas an animal is susceptible, of course, if it is infected with the pathogen, and the infected group is a lot easier to categorize. We could take a large group of animals and perform a disease challenge trial, which does happen in some industries, such as the poultry industry. But in cattle, these disease challenge trials for the numbers of animals we would need to map genes are often very, very costly and arguably unethical, given the large number of animals needed for genetic studies. So I was thinking about this problem, and one of the potential solutions that I had thought of is that perhaps we could actually measure the animal's response to vaccines. Vaccines, of course, are routinely administered in the U.S. as well as other areas of the world, and all animals that are vaccinated, assuming that the animal was vaccinated correctly, were exposed to the same amount of the components to the vaccine. Okay, so you have a large group of animals on farm that will be administered this vaccine, and of course, in most cases, the vaccine doesn't cause an allergic reaction and is completely safe to the animal, unlike something like a disease challenge trial. So is there a way that we can actually measure the response of that animal to the vaccine? And so giving a little primer on vaccine response here. So here's my little cow artwork. Maybe I'm a little more creative than Mark, but not a whole lot. And so we're going to vaccinate this animal and attempt to give this animal increased disease resistance. That's the dogma, right? Is that when we vaccinate animals, all animals, therefore, that have been vaccinated have increased resistance to the pathogen. However, in reality, not all vaccinated individuals are truly protected to disease. There's always, for every single vaccine that's out there, a small, not usually a significant, but at least a small percentage of the population of animals that does not respond to the vaccine and is not protected. And so here I've got a diagram to show that here, where on the y-axis is the antibody threshold, if you will, and individuals below that threshold would be classified as still susceptible to the pathogen, while individuals that produced enough antibodies to the vaccine above that line would be classified as more resistant to that particular pathogen. So my thought is, could we actually select for cattle that move this line down so that we have a larger percentage of our population that is actually more resistant to these pathogens as a result of vaccination? So again, our industry is traditionally focused on manufacturing better vaccines. So an alternative that is, can we improve health again by selecting for cattle that are more resistant to infection following vaccination? You know, you think about what a lot of our vaccine manufacturers do. They're primarily focused on trying to develop new and better vaccines that protect a larger percentage of the population, right? That's their main focus. I'm trying to basically turn this on its head a little bit and use a more complementary approach to where we could actually perhaps select for cattle that are better protected by the currently available vaccines. And so because of the way we measure vaccine response, which I'll talk about shortly, I really believe that as far as the use for genetic selection, probably this is going to result, hopefully, in the future in a DNA test for vaccine response. I don't necessarily see classical EPDs being developed as in a response to this, and that's just because it's difficult to measure vaccine response on the farm. So what I really am attempting to do, or the motivation for this, is to develop a DNA test for vaccine response in cattle. So again, how do we measure vaccine response? And that in itself is not an easy issue. There's basically two aspects of the immune system that we could consider, ignoring the innate immune system for those of you in the audience that know what that is. And that is the humoral immune response, which is essentially the antibodies that are being produced in response to the vaccine. That is much, much easier to measure than the second type of an immune response that can be generated by the vaccine, which is the cell-mediated immune response, where now we're looking at activated immune cells. The cell-mediated immune response may be very important for many of these vaccines, but unfortunately it's also somewhat more difficult to measure on the large numbers of animals that we would need to do these types of genetic studies. So I have initially decided to focus my efforts on measuring the humoral response to the vaccine, but I do want to point out that we do need to measure both of these types of vaccine responses to obtain a more complete picture of the immune response to these vaccines. So very briefly, I want to talk about some previous research that's been done on vaccine response and the genetics to that. I'm not the first person to look into this, and there are several other groups that are investigating this, such as Iowa State. Eric is going to talk about that after I'm finished with my talk today. But there has been some evidence that, again, vaccine response is genetically determined. Both the sire of the calf was associated with Brucella abortus vaccine response, and heritability of BRSV vaccine response was reported to range anywhere from about 0.25 to 0.52. And we have already mapped several genes that have been associated with vaccine response to a foot and mouth disease peptide vaccine, where we identified a number of 77, again, quantitative trait loci. That basically just means genes. This still needs to be confirmed. It can't be used yet, but there are some initial studies that have been looking at vaccine response in the industry that came before me. So my aim at South Dakota State University is, first of all and foremost, to build a resource population to study the genetics of bovine vaccine response. I would, of course, like to estimate a heritability for this. Skipping ahead to the fourth and fifth points, I'd like to try to identify loci that are associated with the vaccine response using both a Candida gene approach as well as a whole genome association study, and I'll go into that a little bit shortly. And then finally, I think we do need to ask the question, is improvement in vaccine response truly associated with morbidity and mortality in cattle? Just because an animal is producing more antibodies in response to the vaccine, that doesn't necessarily mean that that animal is better protected. So we do need to determine this and measure that to make sure that the phenotype is a valid phenotype. So again, BVDV, most of you are familiar with BVDV. I don't have to go into this too much. It's one of several pathogens that are part of the bovine respiratory disease complex. Persistently infected animals are the primary reservoir for this disease. It can cause reproductive problems, suppresses the immune system. As I already pointed out, it costs the beef industry approximately $90 to $95 per animal. So how did we go about collecting our samples to build this population resource to study the genetics of vaccine response? We basically used 4 research herds in the state of South Dakota to build this database. And what we did in each of these herds is we measured basically vaccine response in all of the calves in these herds. These were cow-calf herds. And we also collected a DNA sample. And so the 4 herds we ended up using were the SDSU cow-calf unit, which is located in Brookings, which is where South Dakota State University is at. We collected the samples on a research farm in Miller, South Dakota, roughly in about the center of the state, in the Cottonwood Research Station, sort of in the kind of near Wall, the Badlands there. And then finally, in the northwest corner of South Dakota, we collected some samples from there as well in a town called, or near a town called Buffalo. Just some details about these calves. Most of the calves were either purebred Angus or they had a significant amount of Angus in their bloodlines. And so how do we actually measure BVDV vaccine response? Well, what we did is we wanted to use the same vaccine for all of these individuals so that we didn't have any variation in terms of what vaccine was used in terms of their response. And the vaccine we chose to use was either, for most of them, it would have been Pyramid 5, which includes BVDV as well as some other BRD pathogens as well as some of them were given Pyramid 10, which in addition to the BRD viruses that also included some strains of leptospirosis. So what we would do is we would go out, we'd vaccinate these animals with Pyramid 5, and then at the time we vaccinated, we would collect a blood sample, and we'd do 3 things with those blood samples. The first thing we would do is we would test to make sure that none of the animals were persistently infected with BVDV. If we did find in that any of these particular herds that an animal was persistently infected with BVDV, that would spell some trouble, because that means that there would be an increased likelihood that that animal was exposed to BVDV prior to the vaccination, and we didn't want that, so we would have excluded all those herds. Fortunately, none of the animals that we tested were PI for BVDV. We also determined the maternal antibody concentration of the calves in the blood, and we had to do that because we were vaccinating these calves at a time point when they still had circulating maternal antibodies that were present, and so we needed to account for that in our statistical models. And finally, we used the sample for DNA isolation, and then we went back 20 to 30 days post-vaccination, and we collected a second blood sample. What we used that second blood sample for was, again, to measure the amount of antibodies that were produced after the animal was vaccinated in response to that vaccine. And so, again, as I already said, we needed to account for the maternal antibodies at the time of vaccination. The way we measured vaccine response is we just took the post-vaccination antibodies at about 20 to 30 days, and we subtract from that the maternal antibodies present at the time of vaccination at day 0, and that's how we actually did vaccine response. Now, there's several ways we could have measured humoral vaccine response in these calves, and we chose to use an ELISA. And there are some advantages and disadvantages, and I'll talk about that very shortly, of course. Vaccine response is affected by many different things besides genetics, anywhere from the age, the herd, perhaps gender, even maybe breed composition, and even the vaccine lot number could very well affect vaccine response. And so we would want to include all of those things in our statistical model and account for those things when doing this work. So I already said we used an ELISA for measuring BVD antibodies. Now, if you think back to ways you can actually test for BVD antibodies in a herd, there's basically 2 ways you can do that, right? You can use an ELISA that's more popular in Europe to do this, or the most common thing to do in the United States would be to do serum neutralization, or SN. The problem with SN is that it's more expensive than the ELISA, it takes more time to actually do it, and there's a lot more interlaboratory variation, and it's a more complex technique. So we wanted to see if the ELISA could be used as an indicator trait for those serum neutralization titers. The drawback of using the ELISA is that you're measuring with the ELISA all of those antibodies, essentially, that are being produced in response to the vaccine, to BVD. However, with serum neutralization, now you're not measuring all of the antibodies. You're only measuring the biologically important antibodies, those antibodies that truly protect the animal from BVDV. So that's why that's the drawback of using the ELISA. But if the ELISA was well correlated with our serum neutralization titers, then we could use the ELISA as an indicator trait for those protective antibodies. So again, we collected 406 sera or plasma samples from 193 Angus or Angus cross calves on two of the research herds I discussed previously, and we ran both an ELISA, SN type 1 and SN type 2, on all of those samples at various time points after vaccination. And what we did find is that the ELISA and serum neutralization titers were actually fairly well correlated. This is just a graph showing roughly a linear relationship between the ELISA and the serum neutralization titers. The relationship breaks down a little bit when you get to low antibody concentrations, as you can see down there in the bottom left of the graph, and then that's just with the serum neutralization type 2 titers. The bottom line is that the correlation between the ELISA, SN1 and SN2, was fairly high, about 0.809 and 0.638 respectively. So my conclusion from this is that, yes, the BVD ELISA can be used as an indicator trait for SN1 and SN2, although the correlation is stronger between the ELISA and SN1, and there's a weaker relationship between the ELISA and serum neutralization at low titers. I say a weaker relationship, but still, if you have low ELISA SP ratios, you're going to have low serum neutralization titers. And that basically, the bottom line for all of that is that helps us out a lot when measuring humoral vaccine response in the laboratory. So we've done some brief molecular genetic studies on vaccine response as well. We've looked at leptin. Some of you may be familiar with leptin. Leptin's a very important gene when it comes to carcass and growth, and has an effect on those two traits. But interestingly enough, the leptin gene also produces a protein that's involved in immune response pathways. So we wanted to test to see if there was a relationship between the leptin gene and vaccine response as well, because of that involvement in those immune response pathways. And so just again, some background on leptin associated with back fat, marbling, and average daily gain. A previous study found that it was associated with the humoral rabies vaccine response in cattle. We didn't actually find an association between this particular leptin polymorphism and BVD humoral vaccine response, however. So the most interesting thing about this study, though, that we did find is that sire of the calf was associated with BVD vaccine response. Now, I don't have a heritability to report for you, and that's because this is based on a fairly small number of individuals, and the heritability estimate would have been too imprecise. But the fact that the sire of the calf was significantly associated with BVD vaccine response is a strong indication that this vaccine response measurement is affected by or under at least partly genetic control. So that was actually a very positive thing that we actually found out. We looked at another candidate gene, CR2. Didn't find any evidence for an association with that. The problem with the candidate gene approach, and the candidate gene approach, right, basically is just looking at a particular gene one at a time and testing to see if those genes are actually associated with your trait, is that it's a shot in the dark. And that's why a lot of people have moved on to more whole genome association type studies, essentially using things like the 50K SNP chip to actually do these tests, because it's a more unbiased approach. And so that's what we would like to do eventually as well. We'd like to start genotyping our resource population with either the 3K, which is a smaller SNP panel, or the 50K SNP panel, which is what Pfizer has been using, for example. And we'd also like to eventually try to look at some more immune response parameters, including the humoral immune response to several other components of these vaccines, as well as maybe the cell-mediated immune response as well. As I said earlier, it's a bit more difficult to measure the cell-mediated immune response than it is the humoral immune response, but I think it's important enough that we need to take a look at it. So wrap up here, and then I'll let Erica come up and talk a little bit about what she's doing over at Iowa State, but some unanswered questions I think we have to go forward. This is still a very new area. Not a lot of research has been done yet on it. The first thing is, well, is measurement of antibodies in response to vaccination sufficient for characterizing the immune response? Are antibodies explained at all? My guess is no, but we don't know that for sure. How heritable is vaccine response in USBF animals? What's the relationship between immune response and clinical protection to disease? Again, just because the animal produces a lot of antibodies to this particular pathogen doesn't mean that the animal necessarily is going to be better protected. And finally, can we develop a DNA test for vaccine response in animal health? That's what Mark's working on, too, and a number of different people. And so hopefully we can. Just some quick acknowledgments that I have here at the end. A lot of my collaborators in my laboratory and at SDSU, of course, none of this could be done without the help of our herd managers on South Dakota State's campus. They've been great. And funding sources, I know people here from Boehringer Ingelheim are here, and so they've been providing me the vaccine free of charge for this study for most of it, and I want to definitely thank them for their assistance with this project. So thank you very much.
So, questions?
Antibody response is one thing. What about cytokine response? Have you looked at that at all?
We actually are not looking at cytokine response yet to these vaccines. That is something... Now I understand, yes. Actually, we do have a study going on where we have challenged these animals. Challenge is a rough word. Basically, what we did is we took about 70 or 80 steers, and we exposed them to two PI calves. And so what we're doing now is we actually are measuring those several cytokine levels after exposure to the PI calves, and that research is still ongoing in the lab. None of the calves that were exposed to the PI calves, though, none of the steers actually did get sick or died after exposure to the PI calf, for what it's worth. But.
I'd like to congratulate you on a very nice talk. I would warn you against showing a cow that was that extremely wasted in that yoni slide. We're in a public university in a student union building with students walking up and down the hall. That may not be appropriate.
I did not think of it in that light. I believe you're correct. Thank you.